as it is right now, but things seem to be getting even crazier as the days and the months pass. Welcome everybody to the Storm Is Here podcast. Tonight's podcast, we're going to focus on some warnings that were issued by email to some bankers. No bankers in particular, but bankers in general. And this is some pretty eerie and scary stuff, but at the same time, very predictable, to say the least. So again, we're going to get into a few news articles explaining what is coming down the road. And for me anyways, I've seen this coming for a very long time, ever since the attacks on the Twin Towers in 2001, that our freedoms were eroding. And there was a lot of conspiracy theories, to use a better word, about a whole bunch of things that were coming. And seems like we are in those days. We're living in those days. There, all these conspiracy theories that we talked about in the past are finally coming to fruition. So this is the warning that was mentioned in emails to bankers. This comes out of the Byline Times. And global banks privately prepare for dangerous levels of imminent civil unrest in Western homelands. Global banks and investment firms are bracing themselves for an unprecedented upsurge in civil unrest in the US, UK, and Europe as energy food price spikes are set to drive cost of living to astronomical levels, exclusively revealed. The information comes from the head of Financial Institutions Group, which provides expertise and advisory services to other banks, insurance companies, and other financial institutions. At one of the largest investment firms in the U.S., the senior investment executive who spoke to Byline Times on condition of anonymity, because the information he revealed is considered highly sensitive, said the contingency planners at top financial institutions believe dangerous levels of social breakdown in the West are now all but inevitable and imminent. An outbreak of civil unrest is expected to occur anytime this year, but most likely in the coming months as the impact of the cost of living crises begins to saturate the lives of everyone. The executive works at leading Wall Street firm, which is considered a systemically important financial institution by the U.S. Financial Stability Board. These are institutions whose functioning is considered critical to the U.S. economy and whose failure could trigger a financial crisis, as we've seen back in 2008. According to the executive, major banks all over the world, including the U.S., U.K., Western Europe, are instructing their top managers to begin actively planning how they will respond to the impact of financial disruption triggered by a prolonged episode of civil unrest. However, the banking official did not elaborate on what these planning measures involved beyond reference to stress testing to determine the impact on investment portfolio. So let me get back to this article in a second. They're planning their escape is what they're doing. Okay. And they are the major cause of all this. You know, the financial crash of 2008 and the ongoing poverty and the declining middle class and so on and so on. The entire planet is going into a shithole. You know, once prominent nations like, you know, a lot of the nations in the West who were thriving, had a high level of middle class, are going to be plunged into third world poverty. And they know that, and this is why they're kind of warning each other, because they got so greedy and they pretty much bankrupted the entire planet, and now they're looking for their getaway plan, because they know when the people start losing it, And basically, when the people have lost everything and they lose it, they really lose it. And this is what they're afraid of. Because again, history always rewrites itself. We never learn from history. We always are doomed to repeat it. Let me continue on here. While increased civil unrest in developing countries has been openly discussed by major institutions such as the UN, World Bank, IMF, and other institutions, this is the first time in recent years that expectations of a coming epidemic of social breakdown in Western societies has been attributed to top banking and investment firms. Bingo. All the major banks know that the cost of living crisis is out of control, said the top financial advisor. The pandemic was bad enough and highlighted how certain groups of people were going to be worse affected. The poor, minorities, and so on, but the combination of energy and food shocks are a tipping point that will push Western societies over the edge. This will impact everyone. Well-to-do middle classes will find it harder to afford staple foods and pay bills. So we are anticipating dangerous levels of civil unrest that could spiral into unprecedented social crises. Now, the article continues on. I suggest to look it up. It's a great read, and it's pretty accurate. But what's more scary is the fact that these bankers are emailing each other to let you know to give each other's the heads up that right now an evacuation is probably the smartest thing to do. So again, they're the ones that caused this mess, and now they're the ones who are going to flee from it. Now let me read the next article. This is what is going to happen here here in North America and in Western European countries. What is happening in Sri Lanka is a sign of what's to come here very, very soon. And this is what the bankers have been warning other bankers about. This is out of the Times of India. And the title is What Caused Sri Lanka's Economic Collapse? The South Asian nation of Sri Lanka is experiencing an unprecedented economic collapse that has pushed the government into a deep crisis. The island is struggling to import basic necessities for its 22 million people because of diminishing foreign reserves and crippling debt, spurring weeks of anti-government protests that recently turned violent and led to the prime minister's resignation. Much of the public ire has been directed at President Gotabaya Rajapaksa and, of course, his brother, which I'm not going to pronounce, by the way, it's just same last name, who are blamed by critics for leading the country into the economic crises. And what led to the protests? For months, Sri Lankans have had to wait in long lines to buy essential items because a foreign exchange crisis caused shortages of imported food, medicines, and fuel. Oil shortfalls have led to the sweeping power cuts. Now, you could say whatever you say about the pandemic. Okay, I know a lot of people have different opinions about it. My opinion is that it was planned, and it was a sort of like a dress rehearsal of what is to come. And again, I mention this because there's long food lines in Sri Lanka due to poverty. And there was a lot of food lines that happened here in North America also. Again, more to do with the shutdown of the economy and the total lockdown. And I guess they wanted to see how people were going to react, if they were going to react in a violent way or if they're going to rebel. But a lot of people didn't really think, you know, they weren't really thinking for themselves, and they just fell right into it and they accepted it for what it was. They accepted mainstream news, they gobbled it all up, and they basically lived in fear. Not saying all people, but most, I would say. Okay, let me continue on here. The pandemic and the Russian-Ukraine conflict have made things worse, but warnings of a potential economic disaster began long before. In 2019, President Rajapaksa swept to power months after Easter suicide bombings at churches and hotels killed 290 people. The attacks badly damaged tourism and a key source of foreign exchange, and Rajapaksa promised to pull Sri Lanka out of deep economic slump and keep it safe. The government needed to boost its revenues, especially as foreign debt ballooned for big infrastructure projects, some financed by Chinese loans. But just days into his presidency, Rajapaksa pushed through the largest tax cuts in Sri Lanka history. The move sparked quick punishment from the global market. Creditors downgraded Sri Lanka's ratings, blocking it from borrowing more money as its foreign reserves nosedived. Soon after the pandemic hit, flattening tourism again as debts mounted. So all economies are debt economies, basically. And when you introduce tax cuts, well, you're going to have the creditors at your door asking why. And the reason, and again, the reason why you pay taxes, it's not because it helps build hospitals or fixes the infrastructure. What taxes actually do is it pays foreign debt. Here in Canada, in the States, everywhere you go, tax is a form of a debt paying. And basically you're paying international banks or even local banks for the money that they're lending your nation. And no different with Sri Lanka, and that's why one of the many reasons of why they're in the situation. And what, again, like I mentioned before, what is yet to come here and everywhere else in first world nations, so to speak, okay? Let me continue on here. The Ukraine war has driven up food and oil prices globally, making imports more unaffordable. The country's foreign reserves have dropped below $50 million. This has forced the government to suspend payments on $7 billion in foreign debt due this year, with nearly $25 billion due by 2026 out of a total of $51 billion. So what happens when Sri Lanka cannot pay its debts? Well, we're going to basically see a repeat of what happened in Greece back in 2008 when the whole financial disaster happened. Everybody knows about that. And essentially the creditors walked into the country and they started buying up public assets because the government had no money and they were in the red. So this is the same thing that's going to happen in Sri Lanka. When you can't pay, well, then they're going to look after, or they're going to look out for your assets, and they're going to want to take over them. So these are really scary times for sure. Next article is out of the Verisk, maplecroft.com. When you guys get a chance, please check these guys out. These guys are really good. I did read their mission statement, and for me, it just made total sense. So maplecroft.com, when you guys get a chance. Came across this interesting article, and the title is Dawning in the United States and Around the World. Starts off by saying, as social economic fallout from COVID-19 mounts, we expect the ranks of global protesters to swell over the next 2 years and unrest to sweep across developed, emerging, and frontier markets alike, like I mentioned in the beginning of the podcast. Now, I want to mention something about the COVID-19. Again, you could say whatever you want about the pandemic. Everybody's got their own opinion. But it was kind of funny how in 2017 and 2018, things were really bad economically everywhere in the world. And we were seeing a lot of uprisings. Of course, if you go to my channel, you see a lot of uprisings. Belarus, Nicaragua, Chile, France, Italy, Norway. I mean, there was Middle East countries. There were tons. Even here in Canada and the United States, especially in Canada, we had some serious protesting happening in 2018. So pretty much the world was on the verge of a revolution. And again, all the way up to when the pandemic started. And then, of course, when they enforced the lockdown all over the world, well, of course, all the protesting stopped. So it's kind of, I don't know, for me, I don't find it to be a coincidence. I think the elites knew that a lot of people were pissed there's a lot of income inequality, a lot of poverty, and people basically just had enough. And they had to find a way to kind of quell the protests and kind of slow it down. So I just wanted to throw my two cents about that. And I'll just continue on here with the article. So according to data from our Civil Unrest Index projections, 75 countries will likely experience an increase in protests by late 2022. Of these, 34 predominantly in Europe and the Americas will likely see a particular significant deterioration, defined as a projected decrease of 0.5 or more on our Civil Unrest Index score. Following a tense summer, the United States has seen its standing on the index sharply deteriorate, falling from the 91 riskiest jurisdiction in our Civil Unrest Index in the second quarter of 2020 to the 34th most by the fourth quarter of 2020. While we expect unrest in the United States to gradually subside by the second quarter of 2021, it will likely continue to remain significantly elevated compared to the historic trends over the next 2 years. Globally, the increase of protests is expected to be primarily driven by food insecurity and the erosion of mechanisms that have historically diffused tensions, such as freedoms of assembly and the press and independent judiciary. We expect the surge in instability to take place against a backdrop of painful post-pandemic economic recovery that will likely inflame existing public dissatisfaction with governments. So again, freedoms, the loss of freedoms of assembly. Do you know that in certain states, here in Canada also, here in Ontario, they've enacted a law that prohibits you to protest near borders. And again, this is just a start. In other areas, they're actually picking and choosing. In other states, they are actually writing up laws that are going to prohibit people from protesting in front of government buildings. I mean, how moronic is this? How anti-freedom is this? And again, I think most countries have been losing their freedom since the attacks on the Twin Towers back in 2001. And now it's just basically escalating. It's accelerating, if anything. So let me move on here. So unrest has topped pre-pandemic era, with more expected to come as the pandemic began to spread across the globe in March 2020. The number of protests initially fell, like I mentioned before, due to the widespread introduction of lockdowns. Coincidence? I'm thinking it's not. As the figure below shows, most protests that did not take place during this initial stage of the pandemic were mainly motivated by the direct impact of COVID-19, such as food insecurity, job losses, or frustrations over lockdowns. Speaking of lockdowns, I know in Shanghai they're having a lockdown. And of course, China's very tight-lipped when it comes to news. They really got that locked down. But there has been some leaked videos of people in Shanghai rebelling, because apparently they're starving and they've had enough and they want their freedom also. So this is a good sign. I mean, you know, China, for the most part, have been pretty submissive. They've been pretty obedient. And unfortunately, it's a scary thing. But it looks like the cracks are starting to show, and looks like they are fighting back. So anyways, guys, look, we need to get our freedoms back. We need to get back to having people being in charge. Okay, I mean, here in North America, that's never really happened. But I mean, that was pretty much the intention of the Constitution of America, was that the people were to speak, the people were to be in power. Now, on our YouTube channel, on our Rumble platform and our Anchor platform, Robert Walton has just released a new video. And I suggest you guys listen to it, because it's basically going to tell you what you need to do. We need our freedoms back. We need, and more importantly, we need our democracy back, because times are going to get tougher. As you can see, that the cost of fuel is high. It's just off the charts. Food is, there's going to be a shortage of food come the harvest. And that's when people are going to really start to lose it. Again, I think there's like, I can't remember if it's six meals or five meals or something, but I believe there's five or six meals away from absolute and total chaos. So again, guys, I want to thank you guys for listening to tonight's podcast. And please, guys, if you guys can, swing over to YouTube, to Rumble, or even to Anchor, share the podcast, like the podcast on YouTube, so we can bring up the algorithms and get the message out. So, anyways, guys, thank you so much for listening to tonight's episode.